Hi everybody, my name is Karst. I'm a graduate student from the Netherlands. I'm here in Boston for an internship at Massachusetts Eye and Ear, and it's I'm doing a collaborative study between a lab of Professor Pelli. He's a guy who's working on assistive technology for people with visual impairment, and Professor Kramen, and it's a guy working on machine learning, neural network kind of applications. So it's more in the field of object recognition, object tracking, those kind of things. And we're trying to combine the, let's say, the two fields into new technologies for people with low vision. I wrote my thesis on the title was Challenges and Coping Strategies, Understanding the Visually Impaired as Context for Designing Assistive Technology. And I wrote this thesis because I have low vision myself. I was born with RP, and my visual acuity and my visual field is just above the legal blindness level. But as some of you might know, RP is a progressive disorder, so my vision is expected to decrease over time. So I kind of trying to make it my job that I can work on things that will help myself and also, of course, other people with low vision and blind people. I wrote this paper because I saw a lot of literature, a lot of studies that people were developing technologies for things that I considered not really my problem. For example, I saw a paper that people designed a very big set of glasses with a camera and displays that would film the emotion of the people you're trying to have a conversation with, and it would give you, let's say, an audio cue for what that emotion was. But they kind of disregarded that blind and low vision people, they just use the voice of the person that they're talking to determine the emotion. So sighted people are very obsessed with designing technologies that will bring us into the sighted world and that will let us do what they do. Well, we might have already gotten like a better solution for the thing that they might still consider a problem, but we do not. So I wanted to change the direction of the field toward so that they will work on problems that, or I consider more demanding of a solution. So I started by interviewing particularly low vision people, and I asked them like what the challenges were that they faced on a daily basis. These were people from my home country, the Netherlands, and people from the United Kingdom. And what they told me is that mobility is for them the biggest problem. And afterwards, it was recognizing people, and then came a whole bunch of, let's say, personal problems that only occurred in one person's particular life. But mobility was the problem that was recognized by everybody across the board. And I had an interesting conversation with a blind person last week, and he told me that mobility wasn't really his problem, that he found his way around it by, for example, calling a cab and then getting from A to B in that way. And I thought that was very interesting, because a problem like mobility, or as you might know, as your vision decreases, you start to work your way around certain problems. So mobility might not be a problem for you because you decide not to go out, or you decide not to go across the street to get a cup of coffee, but just try to find some other solution for what you want to do. But so people find like various ways to work around problems, and then it is not a problem in particular anymore for them. But it might still be nice to be able to have the freedom to choose wherever you want to go. I'm particularly focused on mobility and designing tools that will help blind people with mobility. I'm working on a separate project for people with low vision. That's a head-mounted display system. It's similar to, I'm not sure if any of you know what a Google Glass is, then particularly for people with low vision, because the problem with a thing like a Google Glass is that they have a laser that is, they shine it into a prism and it reflects into your eye. But a lot of people, they like to have more contrast in a scene. And the problem with the laser is that you can only add things to your vision. You can only make things brighter. So if you are dependent on making, let's say, the darker colors a little bit darker to increase the contrast, then a Google Glass would not be a suitable solution. So we're working with opaque displays, and we're trying things out with a smartphone now. That's just a development platform, but we're working our way towards designing an inconspicuous set of glasses, because that's another part of my thesis, is that it seemed to me like people, other scientists, didn't realize that blind and low vision people also have a need for having inconspicuous technology so they don't stand out so much. And it is a lot of times disregarded, where they develop a, let's say, a huge headset that stands out very much, and then people decide to not wear it because they don't want to stand out so much using that technology. I'm trying to take these things into consideration as we are conducting this study and developing the technology. So that's a little bit about my background or what I'm working on right now. At the moment, I'm also conducting a study where I want to get insight into how blind people perform mobility tasks now. So what do they use, for example, to get across the street? What do they use to get to the end of the block without or while avoiding obstacles, so we can develop new technology that will fit into their current mobility practices, so we can make it more easy, more stress-free. At the end, if you are interested in helping me, I'm looking for people that are completely blind or have only light perception, and you can participate in it's a walking experiment. It pays $15 an hour, and we would need you for about 3 to 4 hours for conducting the experiment, and it will be under supervision of a sighted guide, so you will be completely safe. If you're interested, please let me know at the end of the meeting.
Where would you be conducting the study?
Schepens Eye Research Institute. It's near Government Center, where the green and the blue line cross.
I did this for Chris a couple of days ago. Wear comfortable shoes.
And would this be one session of 3 or 4 hours?
Yes, one session, yeah.
Stanford Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we had a. I just want to comment about this question about is mobility a big issue for blind people? I find it hard to imagine being able to say that it's not a big issue because it's huge. It's one of the biggest things that we face, whether we're low vision or no vision. In fact, just yesterday, I work at the Perkins School for the Blind. I've been there for 7 years and I know my way around extremely well there. Yeah. I can go from one building to the next. I go all over the place. Yesterday, I came out of a building that I was familiar with, talked to somebody for a few seconds, probably got off on the wrong angle. Once I was messed up, I just kept getting deeper and deeper into it. And I kept going the wrong way, and you know, it was just a fiasco, and that's the kind of stuff that happens to people who are blind.
Hi everybody, my name is Karst. I'm a graduate student from the Netherlands. I'm here in Boston for an internship at Massachusetts Eye and Ear, and it's I'm doing a collaborative study between a lab of Professor Pelly. He's a guy who's working on assistive technology for people with visual impairment, and Professor Kramen, and it's a guy working on machine learning, neural network kind of applications. So it's more in the field of object recognition, object tracking, those kind of things. And we're trying to combine the two fields into new technologies for people with low vision. I wrote my thesis on the title was Challenges and Coping Strategies, Understanding the Visually Impaired as Context for Designing Assistive Technology. And I wrote this thesis because I have low vision myself. I was born with RP, and my visual acuity and my visual field is just above the legal blindness level. But as some of you might know, RP is a progressive disorder, so my vision is expected to decrease over time. So I kind of trying to make it my job that I can work on things that will help myself and also, of course, other people with low vision and blind people. I wrote this paper because I saw a lot of literature, a lot of studies that people were developing technologies for things that I considered not really my problem. For example, I saw a paper that people designed a very big set of glasses with a camera and displays that would film the emotion of the people you're trying to have a conversation with, and it would give you, let's say, an audio cue for what that emotion was. But they kind of disregarded that blind and low vision people, they just use the voice of the person that they're talking to determine the emotion. So sighted people are very obsessed with designing technologies that will bring us into the sighted world and that will let us do what they do. Well, we might have already gotten like a better solution for the thing that they might still consider a problem, but we do not. So I wanted to change the direction of the field toward so that they will work on problems that or I consider more demanding of a solution. So I started by interviewing particularly low vision people, and I asked them like what the challenges were that they faced on a daily basis. These were people from my home country, the Netherlands, and people from the United Kingdom. And what they told me is that mobility is for them the biggest problem. And afterwards, it was recognizing people, and then came a whole bunch of, let's say, personal problems that only occurred in one person's particular life. But mobility was the problem that was recognized by everybody across the board. And I had an interesting conversation with a blind person last week, and he told me that mobility wasn't really his problem, that he found his way around it by, for example, calling a cab and then getting from A to B in that way. And I thought that was very interesting, because a problem like mobility, or as you might know, as your vision decreases, you start to work your way around certain problems. So mobility might not be a problem for you because you decide not to go out, or you decide not to go across the street to get a cup of coffee, but just try to find some other solution for what you want to do. But so people find like various ways to work around problems, and then it is not a problem in particular anymore for them. But it might still be nice to be able to have the freedom to choose wherever you want to go. I'm particularly focused on mobility and designing tools that will help blind people with mobility. I'm working on a separate project for people with low vision. That's a head-mounted display system. It's similar to, I'm not sure if any of you know what a Google Glass is. Then particularly for people with low vision, because the problem with a thing like a Google Glass is that they have a laser that is, they shine it into a prism and it reflects into your eye. But a lot of people, they like to have more contrast in a scene. And the problem with the laser is that you can only add things to your vision. You can only make things brighter. So if you are dependent on making, let's say, the darker colors a little bit darker to increase the contrast, then a Google Glass would not be a suitable solution. So we're working with opaque displays, and we're trying things out with a smartphone now. That's just a development platform, but we're working our way towards designing an inconspicuous set of glasses, because that's another part of my thesis, is that it seemed to me like people, other scientists, didn't realize that blind and low vision people also have a need for having inconspicuous technology, so they don't stand out so much. And it is a lot of times disregarded, where they develop a, let's say, a huge headset that stands out very much, and then people decide to not wear it because they don't want to stand out so much using that technology. I'm trying to take these things into consideration as we are conducting this study and developing the technology. So that's a little bit about my background or what I'm working on right now. At the moment, I'm also conducting a study where I want to get insight into how blind people perform mobility tasks now. So what do they use, for example, to get across the street? What do they use to get to the end of the block without or while avoiding obstacles, so we can develop new technology that will fit into their current mobility practices, so we can make it more easy, more stress-free. At the end, if you are interested in helping me, I'm looking for people with that are completely blind or have only light perception, and you can participate in it's a walking experiment. It pays $15 an hour, and we would need you for about 3 to 4 hours for conducting the experiment, and it will be under supervision of a sighted guide. So you will be completely safe. If you're interested, please let me know at the end of the meeting.
Where would you be conducting the study?
Schepens Eye Research Institute. It's near Government Center, where the green and the blue line cross.
I did this for Chris a couple of days ago. Wear comfortable shoes.
And would this be one session of 3 or 4 hours?
Yes, okay. One session.
I just want to comment about this question about, is mobility a big issue for blind people? I find it hard to imagine being able to say that it's not a big issue, because it's huge. It's one of the biggest things that we face, whether we're low vision or no vision. In fact, just yesterday, I work at the Perkins School for the Blind. I've been there for 7 years, and I know my way around extremely well there. I can go from one building to the next. I go all over the place. Yesterday, I came out of a building that I was familiar with, talked to somebody for a few seconds, probably got off on the wrong angle. Once I was messed up, I just kept getting deeper and deeper into it, and I kept going the wrong way, and you know, it was just a fiasco. And that's the kind of stuff that happens to people who are blind.
You had made mention that it's, you know, obstacle avoidance, and I think as blind people, depending on what you're using, a cane or a dog,
yeah.
usually it's actually obstacle detection.
Fine. Yes.
That's what we use as our landmarks. We
yep.
need to find
yeah.
things. Dogs avoid things. So often with people with dogs, they don't get a sense of like what hedges they're going by or what trash cans are there, unless the dog actually points it out. But for blind people who use canes, it's actually the obstacle detection.
Yeah, you use a couple of key points to get to where you want to...
Yeah.
The optimal path for you is to... let's say, not know about all the obstacles and just maneuver through them without even considering them.
No, absolutely not.
And not for a blind person, but if, for example, I would guide you, I would just guide you through all the obstacles right. without telling you about them. So that's, I'm trying to make something that will be your guide, like a virtual guide that will guide you through all the obstacles, because I cannot tell you of every obstacle. I cannot tell you, let's say, about every fire hydrant and it's so many yards away or right. whatever. So the optimal solution is to just take your arm and guide you through all the obstacles. And I'm right. trying to make something that will guide you through all those things around that all the people.
That kind of product you need to be 100% on, because if you guide me to the wrong place, I won't have a sense of where I am.
Yeah, exactly. It's very complex.
Yeah.
Maybe you need two programs, one for no obstacles, the other one, if you get caught on an obstacle, the other one to tell you about the obstacle.
We're using multiple programs, for example, also for detecting, let's say, things like stairs or other like key points that are very, let's say, where you need to slow down and where you really need to maneuver through the obstacle, because, you know, stairs, it's still an obstacle, but you just need to, yeah.
Well, it's not an obstacle, it's a landmark.
Right.
That's not the same thing at all. An obstacle is something in the way.
Yeah, I might need to know where that
a landmark is.
<that stairs are.
laughs> When you're doing this study that you're looking for volunteers for, will we be walking around sighted guide, or will we be walking around with the device?
With the sighted guide. We need to teach the device what to look for. So what are the key points that are interesting to you? So somebody just mentioned like the stairs could be a landmark. So if we need to look for stairs, we need to know that. We need to train our computer software to look for stairs or to look for a bench or to look for a signpost. So we're trying to figure out what are the interesting key points that you would use in a mobility task. So you would walk around with the sighted guide and we will have some questions for you along the way. So if you're just getting from A to B, you might be interested in different things from you're trying to familiarize yourself with the area, or you're just, and also unfamiliar environment is completely different from familiar.
I mean, you also got to take into account, especially in New England area, that snow changes the whole landscape.
I think, you know, it's a partially sighted or whatever you want to call it. I kind of try to develop a mental roadmap so that wherever I'm going, I kind of know what to look for and what to accept. So when something else is there, or when something else is no longer there, it's sort of like a tripwire where the map just sort of goes blank and sort of reconfigures itself. And until it reconfigures itself, you know, you might be detouring around, you might be trying to double check something. And so it's what you expect and what you don't expect that's going to affect that map.
It's extremely complex. In the study that Sarit did, I think she tried to tackle too many problems at once. She was very interested in knowing everything that people found useful or not useful. And I'm just really set on tackling problems one by one. I'm starting with mobility in unfamiliar environments outdoors.
I just wanted to say something. I'm low vision also. And I spent some time in Germany just recently. And what I noticed is that there, bus stop signs and traffic lights are bright yellow, and also they are at eye level, so I can find them much easier. And here, yeah, basically the T signs, I usually don't find them when I'm there, right at the T, at the sign. I have to look up, and oh no, this is not a T sign, this is something else.
And if you're lucky, you don't run into something else while you're looking up.
While a lot of things have been done in terms of blindness, like the traffic lights, for instance, they could be much more visible. And, you know, particularly if things were, yeah, the bus stops, signs if they're at eye level.
It's interesting that you mentioned the traffic lights, because when I moved here, I couldn't cross roads anymore easily, because people don't care about whether the light is white or red or blue or purple, they just walk. So I cannot walk with people. The other problem is they're always on the other side of the street, and in my country they're on your side of the street, so they're right in front of your nose, and then you can really easily see what color it is, but here it's, I just need to guess and hope for the best. I do think the infrastructure, although you might, I know Americans think that Boston isn't straight, like that the curbs are a little bit curved everywhere. Compared to Europe, it's extremely straight. I can almost walk with my eyes closed and not hit anything while being on the correct side of a curb. And in my country, they just make it like a national sport to put like a small post at every square feet to make it as hard as possible for blind people, I guess. But they're like knee height and they are everywhere.
Probably to keep drivers from the sidewalk.
Yeah, it's to keep drivers out of parking on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare for me, at least.
I found that when I have the most difficulty as a blind person is when I'm absolutely sure I know where I am, but I really don't.
Also, if you're maybe interested in any of, or if you have any questions about things like an e-sight, OrCam, OrCsight, whatnot, I contacted all the people who are working on those things just to see what all the devices do. So if you're considering trying those things out, you can ask me anything about them, mostly what they do and what the limitations are. So feel free to ask me about those things. I have to say, I really like this format that you guys are having in, as you're trying to help each other out with all the pieces of software and all the devices. And I might even try to start something up like this in my own country, because they don't have it here. But I would love to become a member.
And you can also join us online from the Netherlands anytime you want to. We use Zoom. So, this group has been in existence for how long, Tim? 20 years?
Since the 80s, late 80s.
Anyway, well, thank you for speaking, and stick around. We'll be happy to talk to you after the meeting.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'll take this in there.